are watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We continue the march of talking about entrepreneurs, small businesses, as well as medium-sized businesses in operating within a COVID-19 landscape. We know that this crisis is unlike any other. Just recently, I was at a Martrade event talking about the National Exporters Day, and the managing partner of McKinsey underlined the fact that the compression of the economic shrinkage of COVID-19 rivals that of World War II. So that's really to put things in perspective. And that's why we need to talk to entrepreneurs as well as bodies and agencies that help entrepreneurs move forward in this march, including that of Yayasan Peneraju Pendidikan Bumi Putra or Yayasan Peneraju, and how they build coalitions among their stakeholders to help build entrepreneurs that can survive, weather, and perhaps even thrive in this environment. So joining me are two highly distinguished gentlemen, Firdaus Azharuddin, CEO of INSCAN, or Institut Keusahawanan Negara, or the National Entrepreneurial Institute, and of course Nadir Ashafiq, CEO of The Lorry. Gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to speak with us, talk about this most pertinent matter. Let's do a quick stock check into how businesses are performing right now. Nadir, you can actually talk a little bit about how your business is actually coping in quarter three this year.
So The Lorry, what we are a digital platform connecting customers to owners of lorries, vans and pickup trucks. And during MCO, we were affected, you know, like any other businesses, although we were still in logistics, which is at that time considered an essential service, but goods weren't coming in, right? The imported goods aren't coming in, shops aren't open. So at the end of the day, there's no goods to be carried. So we suffered, and in fact, we had to make hard decisions in terms of cutting expenses. We had to cut salaries, cut marketing in order to survive and conserve as much cash flow as possible. And we basically had tough moments until CMCO was announced.
Okay.
Right, CMCO. So CMCO, the conditional MCO, and then after that, the recovery MCO basically turned around our business 180 degrees.
Okay.
Right. And this is due to something called e-commerce.
Right.
E-commerce. So let's talk a little bit about e-commerce.
Yeah.
So in 2019, the management of The Lorry, we actually had a retreat. And we talked about how we wanted to focus on something. Right. And because for the last 5 years of our life, of our since inception, we've been everything to everyone. So we wanted to focus and say, hey, can we become something to someone and have a more focused strategy in terms of product, in terms of technology, in terms of sales and operations. And we decided that e-commerce was going to be our focus strategy. Mm. And in particular, delivery of bulky items, i.e. household appliances and furniture. And we made that move last year around Q2. And it paid off.
And this is where I want to bring in INSCAN as well. Because Firdaus, when you build relationships with entrepreneurs, so how has INSCAN been moving in the past few months? And of course, how do you plan to move ahead?
Our entrepreneurs started having problems as early as last year. Last year, businesses started to see a little bit of a slowdown in the economy. And earlier this year, a lot of people forgot that we got hit by quite a massive flu epidemic coming into the country, and a lot of people were not going out to purchase, going to retail shops and eating. So that was the first start whereby we were asking a lot of entrepreneurs to start to align themselves with the food delivery business. So as early as January and February, those who signed up with GrabFood, FoodPanda and so on, when COVID hit, those who already has signed up with the food delivery business are already prepared, while the rest are actually scrambling. Mm. The rest are actually scrambling. We've made a serious push to train entrepreneurs on online sales, the various facets of online sales, as early as 2 years ago, in Scan together with MDEC. Those who took it seriously and embarked on a digital journey, I think it paid off very well for them during the COVID crisis. But those who have not, there are still people who choose to not go into to it and for whatever reasons.
Come on, let's go through. What are those for whatever reasons? Because I'm really perplexed into these kind of individuals or companies.
Let's be a bit realistic here.
Yeah.
In the first place, right, at any point of time, in any point of crisis, there are always businesses who are in trouble.
Yeah.
right? So I don't think we can count them in, all right? So what happened was when COVID came, it just made it worse, and they just
will go away, lah.
They just had to go away. There are some businesses who have very strong demand physically that they believe the moment the doors open, they can just get the customers back again. Mm. And there are some businesses who are like that, very specialized, niche businesses. However, there are some businesses who can't get over the technology hurdle. These are referring to some business owners who may be a little bit of a later age, whereby they do not have anybody who can help them understand the different aspects of the technology. Okay, so they are unable to make that switch over to digitizing. And a little bit troubling also sometimes when they go into a training room, right? There's the rest of the room is 20-something people.
Okay,
you know, so the speed of training is,
yeah,
you know, it just walks past them.
Yeah.
So what we try to do is we try to adapt our training methods to try to bring up to a certain level of people who do not have that technology capability. For us in InScan, what we first saw on the first day of COVID was everybody was so down.
Mm.
Everybody was down. Everybody was lost. A lot of people don't really know what they can and they cannot do.
Mm.
So the first thing that we did to try to help everyone was we put up an FB live session 3 times a day and just do a whole lot of sharing. Sharing in terms of who's running, who's operating now, how they're doing it, you know, so that the watchers of the people viewing the FB live know, hey, there's still people doing business, there's still activity happening. You know, it's not lock your doors and not do anything. Because as a lot of people know, in times of crisis is when people can find opportunities. So we continue doing these FB live sessions. We're even hitting up to 700,000 views right now. We've recently just stopped it because things have a bit settled down now. So, and then we've tried to tackle individual industries. So we've introduced group coaching sessions by industries. I think one of the few industries that were really hit bad was the spa and the barbershop industry.
Does this mean that you are a little bit stronger in terms of your competitors versus all the other people that are now only just entering this kind of space?
Earlier on, we made the right decision in terms of investing in infrastructure, investing in product and tech, so that we can actually specialize in this bulky item segment. So just to talk a little bit about the market. So a lot of the courier companies in Malaysia, or even regional, they focus a lot on small parcels. Right, and there's no one courier company is actually focusing on these delivery of bulky items of household appliances and furniture. Why? Because the SOPs and the processes are very different. If let's say for small parcels, you can actually drop it off at the reception of any offices and then done. You know, your delivery is done. But for washing machine, for refrigerators, you have to make appointments. And for us to be good at this, We have to create the technology. We have to create scheduling and appointment modules. We have to train our drivers on how to make these appointments and speak to the customer and have that PR skills. So I think we are in a good position to invest and also to thrive in the future. In fact, we are making huge investments. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of improvements to make.
So that's the thing. Are you going to change the way you do business after COVID?
First of all, we've always been, what we say, digital native. So
yeah.
I guess different from other traditional businesses out there, when the very first day we started a business, it's always been digital, i.e. Everything is on the cloud. And also all of our task management is everything on digital. So there was no real need for us to shift to digital during the crisis.
Perfect. This is the point of contention. Digital companies, native digital companies, would not need to pivot the way they do business. They perhaps would do slightly, you know, tweak here and there to address different markets. The entrepreneurs that you work with at InScan, they are brick and mortar, they are small, medium-sized entrepreneurs, some of them are digital natives, and you would see the need for some of these non-digital companies to actually embrace digital approaches. Do you feel that there is a hunger for them to actually embrace that kind of digital approach, or do you sense some hesitancy still?
Absolutely. Since the MCO, we have trained more than 4,800 people.
Since the MCO?
Since the MCO, just over the last few months, 4,800 entrepreneurs in various aspects of digital marketing training, WhatsApp, sales, Instagram, FB, so on and so forth. There is that hunger. There is that hunger in terms of learning it. Mm. We also are very cognizant of the fact that we can't just teach. We have to guide the entrepreneurs through the process, because for a lot of entrepreneurs, maybe their call for action is not that strong. Okay, so then we introduce what we call the e-boarding program. In the e-boarding program, is you start out from zero in terms of your online sales, and then we select a platform for you together with you, and then we will actually assign a specialized coach to guide you through over the next 3 to 4 months in terms of how your sales through these particular platforms. However, Ibrahim, we need to be a bit careful here. I've been telling the entrepreneurs that, okay, going digital just for your marketing purposes is a bit dangerous. Okay, you have to look at your entire supply chain, exactly what Laurie is saying. Okay, so we've been telling the entrepreneurs, with COVID, first step is for you to look at your business model. Don't just jump into the digital agenda without understanding how it impacts your business model. A lot of people did that. They went in, they started selling online, but then they realized that their production and their distribution capabilities were not upgraded to meet with that demand. And they failed their customers. So that's why step number one, we always told them, starting with COVID, you have to relook at your business model. Really understand, are your customers shifting over to digital or not? If you're making all this big shift and then your customers didn't make that shift
and left behind different rooms,
so you know, I mean, unless you're targeting a new group of customers, then it's a different ball game. So it has to be hand in hand. Okay, your capabilities, your internal capabilities, your customers are making that shift, you make that shift, and then it'll be a perfect marriage.
You know, the fun part about Malaysia is that mobile penetration is at 140%, which means out of 10 people, 14 mobile phones are in the hands of 14 people, 80% own smartphones. I think the number is very high now, more than 90%. We are digital savvy. I wouldn't say digital native. We are digital savvy. And people are still, I guess, not that foreign approach towards digital approaches. But there's one entrepreneur that I would like to mention again and again. It's actually this tofu fa seller near my house. Because he sells soya bean and tofu fa from his food truck, and he has never owned a smartphone prior to MCO. I.e., I can't even send a WhatsApp to him because he doesn't own one, right? But since he sold his tofu fa and soya bean in front of the shop, in front of a mixed rice shop, food traffic was high. This was prior to MCO. Then MCO kicked in, zero traffic. Not even minimal, zero, right? Nobody was there. He was in trouble. Cash flow dropped, right? Sales dropped, everything was just going wrong for him. But there was this guy in the mixed rice shop, young guy, helped him out, bought him a cheap mobile phone, smartphone, got him online, got him WhatsApp, made sure that he's on Foodpanda and GrabFood, and sales have been astronomical. According to him, sales have been higher than before MCO, because now, you know, you're no longer restricted to that one street. But there are two elements here in this story. The first is that there was somebody helping him out, somebody that is helping his uncle who is unfamiliar with English, is not that good with Malay, but helping him out. The second is, of course, the ability for him to push forward and embrace this very difficult challenge because of there is a dire need for him to do so. Failure to embrace this technology challenge means the end of his business. Do you feel that Malaysia is at that tipping point where we have people that can help and also the ability for them to embrace change, including that of being digitally savvy or digitally plugged in, is there? What's your opinion on this, either one of you?
Well, of course, more can be done, okay, to help everybody to embrace and make this shift over. Again, what we have to understand is also sometimes the forces of nature will kick in. Those who are unable to make the shift will slowly, for sake of a better word, will slowly die out because they can't make the shift. Okay, and those who can, okay, will get filtered and then be more successful. One thing we've also noticed that's happening in this country is there's a lot of concentration on digitization on the marketing side. Okay, you advertise on FB, you have a website, okay, but then again, your other aspects of the business is still not digitized. And this is something that we really have to work on. Your inventory management, your financials, okay, your customer service. A lot of people think that they're digitized just because they advertise in Instagram and then you're able to transmit the payment via Maybank to you, okay? But that's just the marketing side of it, okay? We really would like to see more and more of our entrepreneurs embrace the entire end-to-end supply chain so that then they can really see the impact and the cost-effectiveness of shifting over to something like that.
Mm. All right.
I think it's a function of supply and demand, so it always comes down to basic economics. So we understand that the government has given and incentivized both sides, i.e. they have given vouchers for people to spend online, number one, on the demand side. And then they've also given grants, automation grants, or even digitalization grants to SMEs to pick up digitization. So I think these two are perfect already. But at the end of the day, if let's say these two can go up together, it will spur, it will create a ripple effect. And it will create new businesses and new industries. For instance, you know, like what earlier was mentioning, you know, inventory management, financial management, all this can be digitized. And if let's say companies, software as a service companies, can come in and help these businesses to go online, I think it will help the industry as a whole.
Okay, we'll take a short break before we continue our conversation with InScan and The Lorry. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying on with us. We are still talking about COVID-19 and how it impacts entrepreneurs, not just the entrepreneurs that are currently in the field right now battling the market, but of course institutions that help these entrepreneurs. One of which is of course Yayasan Peneraju, Pendidikan Bumi Putra, Yayasan Peneraju. Let's talk a little bit about how you guys are working with Yayasan Peneraju.
We've had a long relationship with Yayasan Peneraju. In fact, InScan and Yayasan Peneraju came from the same parent years ago, which is Teraju. In fact, we've even had programs whereby we're trying to infuse entrepreneurship into the minds of the professionals that are being trained by Yayasan Peneraju. We feel that more and more of the Bumi Putra professionals used to be a lot of them would go in and into their own business, form their own consulting companies, so on and so forth. It's less now. It's a bit more comfortable to just work for big companies since they have already come into Malaysia and then stay there. Mm. So programs that we've done with them is infuse the thinking of entrepreneurship into these young professionals, especially the ones that's doing the ACCA program with Yayasan Peneraju, expose them so that when they come out, they will work for a few years, but they have in their mind that they want to go out on their own. Because we want more Bumi Putra professionals to do that.
Yeah, the thing about this is that money can be scarce and everybody is concerned about the budget right now. And of course, in November, we'll hear the new budget. Mm-hmm. And this will impact how Yayasan, you guys, everybody, right, is going to perform. What would be some of the mitigating factors that you can actually think about right now when we talk about funds getting smaller but entrepreneurs getting larger following COVID-19?
I've always believed in this, that there's opportunity for us to do better programs which are more outcome-based. Mm. Okay. I think in Malaysia, in the early years, when we first gained independence, a lot of our entrepreneurship programs were more of enculturation, dalam bahasa Malaysia, pembudayaan. Why? Because the Malay community were naturally scared to go into business. Parents will not accept suitors for their daughter if they heard that they're a businessman. But now it's a good thing.
I think you hit on the nail on that one. But yes.
Yeah. So, I think we need to move away from enculturation. Okay. Move away into more specific, more targeted, more outcome based programs whereby we can also start shifting to more quality based rather than quantity based program.
Yeah.
Because yes, we still want to produce X many of entrepreneurs amongst the Bumi Putras, but at the same time, people like Nade, the successful Bumi Putra entrepreneurs, okay, we need to continuously support them because why? They create employment. they create new thing in the industry. They also become figures whereby the rest of the new Bumi Putra entrepreneurs look at and say, oh wow, this person can do it. It's not just something that happens in the US or in India and stuff like that. So these visuals need to happen. So I strongly believe that with limited resources that we have, we need to balance it out and continuously support more targeted programs for our entrepreneurs.
Well, what do you think, Nadeh?
I think for young entrepreneurs, they have to explore deep technology, right? Especially the technology entrepreneurs, lah. Because right now, you know, e-commerce, you know, Uber for X, which is essentially our business, right? Platforms, I think has been done. So there's nothing unique that you can bring to the market and try to compete with the existing players. But what we lack right now, you know, are players around the lines of artificial intelligence, you know, big data, robotics, drone technology. All of these are green fields that really young entrepreneurs can explore. Tetapi, what's the problem here? The problem here is we don't have a pool of talent to actually train them. Maybe InScan can train them and become entrepreneurs.
Do you think that young entrepreneurs are heading in the right direction?
Absolutely. You know, I think if they focus time and resources to bring up students that specialize in this field, get them to take masters and PhD in these fields, and then bring them to entrepreneurship, I think at the end of the day, that will help the country overall.
I don't know whether you guys are familiar with this, but in Germany as well as in Sweden, they call this a triple helix model where yes. where the industry, the university, as well as the government is working hand in hand to find solutions to a problem that they have identified, meaning that they're not off tangent. Normally academia would go off on finding a solution that nobody needs, right? But this triple helix model have not yet been inculcated in a lot of Asian countries for various reasons. Okay. When I went to Sweden a few years ago, when I saw this, and I'm like, okay, so no wonder they're solving problems all the time, because yeah. industry always has problems. People like German companies like Siemens, like BMW, they always have issues that they want to solve, much of which, for instance, using deep technology. When they go to the government funds the university, finds a solution, and you can have a working solution to a working problem. Do you feel that this integration needs to be further enhanced between the players or the stakeholders right now in this country? Do you feel that there's an opportunity for us to embrace this? I don't know whether to call it a triple helix model or some pseudo, you know, model that fits our society.
Well, if we were to embrace it, I would strongly prefer that it be more entrepreneur-driven. If it's very government-driven, very government-heavy-driven, or even if it's university-driven, then it might not get the real impact. And the real impact at the end of the day is commercial sense, okay? Because anything that we do needs to have commercial traction, okay? Or else the government ends up funding it for donkey years and it still won't run.
Now, hang on. When you say commercialization, a lot of tech companies do stuff that might not seem to be commercially prudent, but they still invest nonetheless.
Yes.
We've seen how Facebook has run millions, if not billions of dollars of losses in the early years before they finally turned profit, and look where they are now. Apple, whatever, they all do the same. Technology runs in a different capacity and trajectory as brick and mortar companies. Yep. So for instance, let's talk about the lorry right now. Are you willing to invest, you know, or burn cash in order for you to drive innovation and also research and run at a loss for a certain number of years until you finally turn a profit and perhaps even just see a golf stick there going to happen? What would be some of the options that you have right now?
When we started the business, we always said that our strategy from the get-go has always been land grab, i.e. expand market share as fast as possible at any cost, right? So like any other tech companies, lah. And that means, investing a lot on R&D, investing a lot in product and tech resources, which, like you said, you know, will cause us to incur some losses in the early years. But alhamdulillah, I think now it's paying off, right? A lot of the things that we built, you know, in the early stages have created that moat, have created that differentiation between us and other traditional businesses, traditional courier companies or logistics companies, that allows us to grab businesses from multinationals, grab businesses from the major e-commerce platforms. And I think in order to get more entrepreneurs to do this, to invest in R&D, to invest in market share building. We have to have a thriving investment and also investor community, right? So the venture capital industry, the PE industry, the Teraju's of the world, you know, Teraju has been doing fantastic in terms of seeding a lot of Bumiputra entrepreneurs, and they gave them the first 500,000 ringgit, and you know, some of them are very, very successful at the moment. So I think you know, we need to further develop the funding community and get more funds from Japan, get more funds from Korea and China to invest here. And I can talk like two to three hours just on this. Mm. And I think that will help us to build more sustainable companies that look into deep technology and that has defensible moats. Create, like you said earlier, a recession-proof, pandemic-proof their business.
I plead to the entrepreneurs out there, please make plan B, contingency plans. A lot of people think the worst is over, okay? But we can't say that. So the most important thing that as a business or even as a person now, we need to learn over what has happened in the last 6 to 7 months, mm. okay? What did you suffer most during your business, okay? And then make sure that you put up a contingency plan that if tomorrow your shop, your warehouse gets hit with a Temco, okay? And then don't get caught with the same issue all over again. So I'm pleading to all of the entrepreneurs out there, please make, please invest a little time, maybe a little bit of money also, consolidate your customer database better and stuff like that, so that in the event, okay, we get hit with a Temco or movement order again, okay, I'm not saying it's going to happen, it may happen, but at least you are better prepared compared to March and April.
Yeah. Ibrahim, I'm actually 32 years old. And for me and my peers, and also not just in Malaysia, but also regionally and globally, especially tech entrepreneurs, it's their first time facing a recession, right? So we are literally, you know, just doing things as we go and doing, trials, right? So what we've learned so far in the past few months, number one, I think is cash flow, right? We have to ensure that whatever we do, we conserve cash flow as much as possible. Only spend what is necessary. No, only spend what could give us the right ROI. And you know, we've been spending after the, you know, post pandemic, we realized that you know, we've been spending a lot of things that weren't necessary before. So I think cash flow considerations is very important. Mm. And I think at the end of the day, my message to entrepreneurs out there is to be resilient, mm. because you know, I've had friends who are in the travel hospitality business that have pivoted completely, right? Because mm-hmm. they know they can't do business for the next 1 year or so. Some of my friends have even, you know, from a traditional business, a traditional travel business, they have started software as a service business. And this goes to show that entrepreneurs, you know, they are a very rare breed, mm. right? A very special group of people. And I think they will find a way and means to do things if given the opportunity.
Of course. Great chat, gentlemen. That was Nadir Ashafiq of The Lorry, as well as Firdaus Azharuddin of InScan. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroown.com, look for Notepad over there. You can also download, you can also watch these interviews on your mobile devices. Just download the Astro on the app, wherever you get the application. Till then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.